And if you're trying to buy a house right now, you already know it is not easy. For years, houses have been selling for tens of thousands of dollars above asking price, with bidding wars and people putting down all cash offers. And the pandemic has made things far worse in many areas. This is also up against a deepening pain point. The Association of Realtors reports that construction on new homes has fallen short over the last two decades by 5.5 million units. So why aren't more homes being built? Derek Thompson says local governments and communities are partly to blame. And Derek's a staff writer at The Atlantic. He joins us on Mondays from Washington. Hi, Derek.
Hey, good to be here. Thank you.
Good to have you. So here in California, like many areas, we've been dealing with a housing crunch like this for years. Can you lay out what's been happening nationwide, how the pandemic has made things worse?
Yeah, I think some of the biggest problems facing this country, racial inequality, political polarization, declines in innovation, millennial angst, a lot of it can be tied back to the scarcity of housing. And that scarcity has several reasons, but a lot of it comes down to this. We can build houses. We have the technology, but we haven't had the will. And we haven't had the will for much of the last decade. The last decade was the worst decade for housing construction in 60 years. And the reason is largely because states, cities, and neighborhoods have made it too hard to build. We have too many rules designed to prevent new construction of homes rather than encourage the new construction of homes for a growing country.
Yeah, anti-development in communities, NIMBYism, as we often call it. Mm-hmm. We know that is a major problem. Can you give us an example of how all of this is playing out with these latest trends?
Sure, I'll give you a few. There's a couple levels here. So let's start small and work our way up. At the neighborhood level, you have throughout the country, but notably in rich coastal areas, this extreme aversion to new housing projects that might dilute the value of the homes that are already owned. This attitude sometimes goes by the name, as you said, NIMBY, not in my backyard. That's, for example, residents saying, you know, I want to block construction of this new condo because I want to preserve neighborhood character. So one level up from that, the neighborhood, you have local policies. So for example, I live in Washington, D.C. There is a height ceiling in Washington, D.C. that says you can't build buildings that are higher than this level. Famously in California, you have the great prevalence of single-family zoning, which essentially says that only detached single-family homes can be built in certain areas, that rules out apartment buildings. And then finally, one level up from the local policy, the city policy, you have state policies, like some environmental regulations that have emerged in the last few decades. And I think while a lot of these environmental regulations are very well-meaning and they might accomplish some important ends, they've made it really, really hard for new constructions to get underway. So at the local level, at the neighborhood level, at the city, at the state level, you have sort of these, it's like a Russian nesting doll of NIMBYism, which makes it really hard to say, ah, if we just change this one thing, we can fix the whole problem. It really is this nested challenge.
But Derek, you do see how these sometimes governmental solutions to build density can run up against the desire that people have to live in quieter communities with less traffic and those types of things.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is another reason why I think this is a hard problem to solve. You know, by law and by custom, the U.S. has encouraged people to buy and cherish their houses, treat their houses as investment vehicles. But by doing that, by asking Americans to see their homes as a precious source of their wealth and their intergenerational wealth, those laws essentially activate, I think, a kind of scarcity mindset. And so is the seeds of NIMBYism, right? People say, I own this property. It's a huge part I put a huge part of my income into it. It's a huge part of my wealth. I don't want to dilute my equity with new housing construction that, oh, by the way, is also going to be really loud and dusty and annoying. It's going to, you know, make it less enjoyable to walk through the community. So I understand where a lot of this aversion to new construction comes from. But what happens is if you scale all these individual decisions to say, oh, don't build here, don't build here, don't build here, what ends up happening? Well, you have a situation like California, where there is a housing shortage of several million homes, homelessness is rampant, people are moving out of the state at a faster rate than any time in recorded history. So you scale up these individual examples of reasonableness and you get the kind of crisis that California in particular is facing.
Derek, we can't end on this. I mean, do you see at all, I only have about 30 seconds with you, this worsening in the pandemic leading to maybe new urgency for new solutions?
Well, the emergent solution is that if housing isn't going to be built in San Francisco or LA or Boston, then people will leave, right? They will leave and they will move to the places where housing is more ample and more affordable, like Texas or North Carolina or Arizona or Idaho. That's already happening. You are already seeing this migration from the coasts, especially from the Northeast and from California, to these cities in the Inner West and in the Sun Belt. That's going to continue, and it's going to reshape the demographics of America and the politics of America in ways that we've talked about here. That is going to be the solution. If you don't build the houses where people live, they will simply move somewhere else.
Derek Thompson, staff writer with The Atlantic, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you.